The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
The brother of a woman who was murdered alongside her two daughters says the horrors they suffered will stay with the family forever. John Whelan recently met the parole board as part of the battle to keep the man responsible for his sister's death, Brian Hennessy, behind bars. And John is with me now. Hello, John.
Morning, Claire. How are you?
It's good to talk to you. So you were back at the parole board recently, is that right?
Yeah, the beginning of, I think it was around the end of March, middle of March, we met with the parole board in Carlow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how was it this time?
This time it was a little bit different. This is our third time to engage with the parole board to kind of plead with them not to let Hennessy out. The first time was after 7 years or 8 years, and that was just, we could just communicate to them then by letter. We couldn't meet them personally. Mm-hmm. So that has changed in the meantime. But yeah, I have to say they were lovely people, very welcome. It was very warm, very understanding, and felt like we were heard. Myself and my wife attended, and yeah, we read a statement explaining how we were feeling about this and about the process. We acknowledged that this is a system that they have to work in as well, and we acknowledge that. But we also said that that this system by its design is just re-traumatizing families. It's a hamster wheel of trauma every 2 years.
Yeah, I know you have been long campaigning for change in this area, which we'll talk about in a minute, you know, find out what you think needs to happen. But I always feel when we hear about the parole board and how it works, that a lot of people would not be aware of the system and how it's set up, John. And I'm sure you found that in your campaign work over the years, that people are often surprised, are they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think if you go back to the very basics of even how a sentencing hearing is reported in the media, we'd often hear on TV and print in the papers and radio where someone is described as being jailed for life or life in prison. And that is far from the truth. That's not the case at all. The actual sentence is you're sentenced to 12 years, as it is now, before you can apply for parole. So there's the minimum sentence is 12 before you can apply for parole. It's not life. No one has ever spent their life in prison in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first kind of myth that's kind of out there. And it's very comforting for people that are not in the situation to hear, oh, jail for life, justice is done. That's not the case.
And you found that out through your own personal experience and through what happened to Sharon and her two little girls back in 2008. So every 2 years now, Hennessy will apply for parole and you have to go through this exercise where you have to say why he shouldn't be released.
Exactly that. And I don't know, it's they say to the family, like this, they said to me, it's optional, like you don't have to kind of go through this. But actually, you do. You know, I'm the voice for the girls that don't have a voice anymore. And there is an obligation there, I feel, on my part, to engage with this every 2 years and to do my utmost to make sure that Hennessy spends every day he can in prison. And I think that is in itself a very traumatizing experience. But it's something you feel you have to do because people need to understand this is a war that families will eventually lose. That perpetrator will be released at some stage, but it's about trying to win one battle at a time to make sure that is as long as possible. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't really be in having to do that. We've been through enough, in fairness.
And John, you're a psychotherapist. You also work with other families and help to support them. Do you still find it re-traumatizing to have to go to the parole board?
Absolutely. And I didn't realize the impact until the first time I engaged with the parole board. The stress and the anxiety leading up to it, it's my profession, but even I took my eye off the ball for a while, and the impact on me was quite significant. You know, I had to take time off work and take a step back from everything. Even at the moment, I'm after taking a step back from doing a lot of the in-depth trauma work with people in the room, because it's very heavy, obviously. But I have to look after myself as well, and mm-hmm. so that's the priority right now is that. But and it doesn't have to be like that, Claire. You know, I think the system is not trauma informed, And it could be designed an awful lot better to actually look after families instead of harming them.
And before we get to what you think should happen, when do you then hear back the decision of the parole board? How long does it take?
They have to get submissions from various sources around rehabilitation and all that type of thing. And so you're looking at maybe 2 months, maybe a little bit more, depending on how many cases they have to hear or how many people are actually up for parole at this time.
So regardless of whether the family of the victim decided to take part in the parole board hearing or not, they will be notified, will they, of the decision?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They will be notified, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk then about what you think the system should look like.
Okay, I'm a member of SAVE, Sentencing and Victim Equality for Families Affected by Homicide. We've been campaigning for years. There's a simple way to end this cycle of trauma for families, and that's to bring in the tariff system, minimum sentencing. Helen McEntee suggested it, that, or talked about it last year, that it's in the process or it's going to be looked at. So minimum tariffs would give the judge discretion to hand down sentences of 20, 25, 30, 35 years, or what they call a whole life order, like they have in England. That would allow families to heal, or give them more time to do so. And I think that because people in this situation, and I know from my experience, grief and trauma is not linear. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't start at a particular place of extreme grief and trauma and work its way down to a place where it becomes, you know, something that is very manageable and just part of everyday life. It one day can be great and the next day can be horrific. It just depends. And families need time to be able to process that and try and find a way to live with that. But what the state does, the state brings you back into a system that doesn't allow for that space and time for that healing to happen. You're engaged in this for the rest of your life. It's nearly a life sentence for the families as well, mm-hmm. to be part of this process. So, it doesn't have to be that way.
So a 20, 25 or 30 year minimum sentence would give the families that period of time guaranteed that they can go and try and deal with what has happened to them, knowing that there will not be a parole hearing within those years or before that minimum sentence has been served.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very much the system they have in England where that sentence must be served before they're even considered for parole. So even at that stage, a parole board could decide that they're not suitable for release, or they're not rehabilitated, or whatever that might be. But the whole area of rehabilitation, and that's another subject as well that needs to be kind of looked at as well, because no one knows what that looks like. No one knows how it works or what the prisoner has to engage in, what constitutes rehabilitation, all that type of thing. But like, families don't get to hear anything about the prisoner and their engagement, but the prisoner gets to hear every syllable that we say or write in the parole process.
And have you met the current Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, John?
No, I've written to the Minister looking for a meeting just to find out where or what the situation with the proposed minimum sentencing that Helen McEntee was talking about when she was Minister. I've got an email back just to say that they have received the email, but I haven't heard anything back about a meeting or anything like that, because if it is a case that he's going to go forward with this and bring it into law or whatever, I think it's important that families have a say in that, that we see ourselves as important stakeholders in what that should look like. And also the whole idea of supports for families that out there, that we feel that there should be a dedicated, independently funded service to support families through counselling and therapy. For the duration that they needed, and currently that's not there.
So we don't have that in terms of victim support or any of the organisations that people might have heard about. They're not doing the job after the sentencing has happened. Is that your point?
Well, the point is that anything out there is voluntary or uh-huh. is not funded and not funded to sufficient levels. When we compare, for example, legal aid for example, that there's over 50 million spent every year on legal aid. Which is fine. It's that's the money that needs to be spent on that. When you compare that to what's spent on supports for families, that are living with trauma and that have gone through such a traumatic event, it's a drop in the ocean. Very little coming the way of organizations that are trying to support families through that. Mm-hmm. But it's not just families, it's communities that are affected by this as well. You know?
And when we consider it now, you've had the hearing that you've been to at the end of March. You get a year's reprieve, and then I'm sure the build-up starts again. You know, I have to start thinking about making my case now for the next hearing.
Absolutely, yeah. That that bleeds into every part of your life. Do you know what I mean? Personally, professionally, you know, it's always there. It's always in the background, or it's always, as it gets closer to the time, then it just gets, the onus gets heavier and heavier that, you know, I have to engage with this and make sure that I have done my best to make sure that this person is not released for the horrific crime that he has committed. I just think that's an awful pressure to put on a family or an individual that is trying to get to a place where they're living with something rather than suffering from a system that's putting them through a trauma that's unnecessary.
It's a huge pressure, John, and I think a lot of people would agree with your points there today. Thanks so much for talking to us. John Whelan there, and we remember John's sister Sharon and her two children, Zara and Nadia, who were killed in 2008. A listener says, we absolutely should have a whole life order in Ireland. It beggars belief that we don't. If you have any views on what John had to say, do get in touch on WhatsApp 087 1400 106. Back after this break.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.